You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha-ha. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see.
Well, if you didn't know what the title of that was, then they're coming to take you away.
You should have seen Sam's face.
Well, I've never heard that in my life, David. I don't think I'm going to let you choose music
it's
next month.
Awesome. It's utterly awesome.
And it's Napoleon 14, I'm assuming, with those Roman numerals.
Yes, yes. Napoleon the 14th, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
There you
okay.
go.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to the Stone Tapes. I'm Sam Stone, also known as Samantha Lee Howe, and I'm welcoming two lovely young ladies to the studio this month, and we've got Eloise Sheehan.
Hello.
And Ava MacDonald.
Hello.
The usual midweek drivettes.
Yes.
Two lovely young girls, and they are going to be also, hopefully, or at least Ava is going to be joining us at Sci-Fi Weekender at the end of the month, aren't
that's
you?
That's very true. I will be.
And also in the studio we have David J. Howe.
Good evening.
In case you didn't know. And of course, our producer Alex Levchuk.
Good evening.
And on the telephone, the lovely Patricia, H for Hottie, Ash. Hello, Patricia. How are you today?
Hello. They haven't quite come to take me away yet.
You haven't got over that yet, have you? I know.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, because we've got this we're having a rough theme today of sort of villains and so on and so on. And I just thought that song was quite apposite as we're talking about the Joker.
Yes,
and all sorts
I was going to
things,
say it did remind
know.
Me a little bit of the Joker, or
yes.
maybe Psycho.
Yes,
you know,
Psycho. Yes. I suppose we could have played that "She's a Little Bit Psycho" song.
Oh, I like that song. Do you like that song, girls?
What's the song? Yeah, no, I really like the song. I've heard it before.
The one
coming
to
take me
away.
Yes. No, I've heard that song before. That's why I was head bopping along with you.
Oh, yes, fantastic.
No, it gets you, that song. Something about it that's enticing. I don't know what it is. But
I think it could be quite addictive if you heard it a few times. What did you think of it, Eloise?
The same as you, really. A bit confused.
What is this? Patricia, have you heard that song before?
I have, actually.
It's just you.
I love how gleeful it is.
Just Eloise and I, then, off foot. Yes. It seems. We've had a very sheltered life, haven't we?
Stay away, I'd say. Stay away.
So,
well, I just haven't come to take you away yet.
No, but it's been close a few times. Patricia, what are you going to talk to us about today in your corner?
Well, first, I'm going to tell you that I'm wearing a shirt that says Wicked. I felt it appropriate for the villain theme.
Fantastic.
I'm going to tell you guys about Megamind. Everybody probably has seen the trailers for it. It's it came out a while ago, like almost a decade ago, and it is adorable. It is the most adorable movie about a supervillain I've ever seen. And if this had come out like a couple decades sooner, it's the thing I would have watched 5,000 times as a kid.
Oh. Tell us the story. It's, give us an idea of the plot.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so there's a villain and his arch nemesis, and the villain is Megamind. The movie's about him, and he's not actually as evil as he thinks he is. He really just wants somebody to play with. He really wants a friend, but he's got sort of a skewed perception of reality, and he never really had a friend growing up. He was raised in a prison for reasons. He's an alien, and he's very, very smart and extremely inventive. So, of course, he's the bad guy, the supervillain, and his rival is basically Superman. He's named Metro Man because they live in Metro City, and so Megamind accidentally kills Metro Man. Oops. That's the beginning of the movie, and at first he's, you know, really happy about this, and then he gets lonely. He's like, oh. And he also falls in love with the reporter, who has an appropriately alliterative name. Her name is Roxanne Ritchie. He keeps kidnapping this reporter. She's got like a frequent kidnapping card. You know, it's like, oh, it's Tuesday, time for my kidnapping. Here we go. Yep. Oh no, screaming. Ah, I'm so scared. Oh no, the crocodiles again. Yep. Every week.
So is there a little bit of a Penelope pit stop motif going on there with the crocodiles you mentioned?
A little
bit. So you're not getting tied to rail tracks.
Basically, you know, you kidnap the girl, Metro Man comes and rescues the girl, and that's what you do as a supervillain. And Megamind kind of falls in love with her, and then there's a new threat, which is kind of Megamind's fault. Okay, it's definitely Megamind's fault. He's very brilliant, really, really unlucky, and super lovable. And he's got this little fish minion who's like a fish, an alien fish, in a fishbowl on top of a gorilla body. And he's the most adorable fish you have ever seen outside of Finding Nemo.
Cool. And what would you give it out of 10, Patricia?
9 out of 10.
Well, that's
definitely
good.
They get a lot of the superhero, supervillain tropes in a really amusing way.
We should probably point out that it is actually an animated film.
Oh, yeah, it's an animated film.
Which is probably why I haven't seen it.
Which is probably why Sam hasn't seen it. I've seen it, and
I
agree
with
you, Patricia.
It's fun for the whole family.
I think it's a great, great fun film. He's got like a Mekon kind of head, hasn't he? This is sort of a super enlarged head because he's so intelligent.
You know, because he's very, very smart, so he's got a big old brain.
That's the one.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen his MRIs. I don't know what his brain looks like.
Oh, it's good fun. It's good fun. And it's kind of, it's just like a lot of these sort of animated films, particularly like Pixar and Disney and the things we've been having recently, there's this underlying moral and story as well, isn't there? And here we're sort of going, well, you know, if you're the mega villain, what do you do if your nemesis is not there anymore? You know, life starts to get a bit boring, you know?
Have either of you two ladies seen it?
No, I've not really seen many films recently.
This is not recent. This is
an old one.
But
no,
yes.
No, just in general, I've not really seen very many films. But no, I don't think I've seen that one. I went to watch it at the cinema. So.
Highly recommend. It was streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, you liked it.
Now it's not streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
Inexplicably.
Ah, right. Okay. That happens on Netflix, unfortunately. One day you're halfway through a film, the next day it's gone.
The next day it's not there anymore. But other Netflix is available because, of course, you're in Texas. And your Netflix is different from our Netflix in the UK.
Yes, we might actually
That's true. Might be actually available for you guys.
And other streaming services are available, as always.
So,
I essentially found it on Amazon Prime Video.
Okay. There you go.
I think we have seen it on one of those ourselves, because you've mentioned, let's watch it, and I've gone, no.
Yes. I think my brother brought it over. I think my brother brought it over one Christmas to watch.
Did
that's
he?
That's when we saw it, yes.
Oh, did I see it as well, or
did I go
off and just drink wine?
You might have gone off and just drank
wine.
That's
probably what I did. Like, okay, they're watching cartoons, I'll go and drink some wine.
It's worth watching. It's a cartoon, but not really made for the kids.
Exactly.
I probably would like it. Have you seen Igor?
No. I think I've seen that, actually.
I
like
that one.
It sounds a bit like Igor to me, and it also sounds a bit like Despicable Me, which I do also
it is.
Love.
It's got a similar
vibe
to it.
Yeah, it is a little bit Despicable Me.
I think it has the same director.
I think it's by the similar people. Same company?
Yeah,
I think it's a DreamWorks.
In that case, then you might just be persuaded.
Eloise says she thinks it might be the same director, but we're not certain on that one, so...
Sounds good. Well, thank you
so much. Is that director a supervillain?
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice. Because I speak of the pompousness of love. People talk about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry. Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. Play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I get my loving on the run. Music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one. I'm right here at home. You're the cutest thing I ever did see.
Really. And that was the Steve Miller Band, The Joker. And talking of jokers,
here's a joker.
Hello, Robin Pierce.
I've had better intros.
I was actually thinking about what you're going to talk about. So what's
your
view of Newcastle today?
Speak for themselves. right. can you believe that the Joker is actually 80 years old next year?
Good Lord.
He's looking good on it.
First having made his debut in Batman number one, spring 1940. Oh. And he was actually killed in that initial story. But he was so popular that he came back in the next issue. Back then, Batman was only published quarterly. How odd. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we've seen many incarnations of that character. You know, in the 50s, he became more of a nuisance clown. In the 70s, he regained his homicidal roots, and he's carried on from there, ever upward, ever higher. He's gained a girlfriend in Harley Quinn, of course.
Equally insane.
But actually, we know very little about him. We don't even know his real name.
Mm.
In the comics, it has never been revealed.
Oh, because he's given a name, obviously, in the Batman with Keaton.
That's right.
When he's Jack Nicholson.
Jack Napier is what he's called. The Napier surname came as a tribute to Alan Napier, who played Alfred the Butler in the Adam West TV series.
Oh, cool.
TV series.
I didn't know that. So
we kind of got a little bit of gathering together of different versions of his origins in the mid-1980s in a comic book called The Killing Joke, which has basically become, well, canon, really. And when I heard that they were going to make a film, a standalone origin film about the Joker, I thought, great. But they've already done it in the animated version of Killing Joke. And then they said, you know, Joaquin Phoenix. I thought, whoa, heavyweight actor, this is going to be good. Then they said, but we're not following any comic book continuity here. And I thought, oh, really?
Well, that's very freeing for them, but not great for a fan.
Very, yeah, but you've just alienated the very audience that you're trying to pull in. And I thought, oh, it's going to be like Halle Berry's Catwoman all over again. Or worse, Josh Trank's version of Fantastic Four from a few years ago.
No!
You've just triggered Alex.
You know, you just made the very noises that were going on in my head. So anyway, I went to see it, and I've been keeping away from spoilers, pretty much the way the vampires keep away from daylight. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Anyhow, because I was out of the country when the film came out, and I saw a lot of reviews. This film incites violence. This film does that. This film does something else. This film should be banned. This film is great. So I went to see it. And you know what? They lied. It does kind of follow a comic book continuity.
Oh, that's
good. Fair bit of the Killing Joke in there, in that the Joker, pre-Joker, called Arthur Fleck, is a failed comedian. He's a failed clown. He tries stand-up. Nothing works for him. Basically, he is life's whipping boy. He also suffers an unfortunate affliction where it's called pathological laughter. He'll laugh nervously, loudly, and hysterically at inopportune moments, which gets him beaten up quite a lot. But deep in his heart, you know, Arthur's a good guy. He wants to be a comedian, and you know, he's just not that funny. And whenever he's on stage doing his stand-up routine, he starts laughing and he can't get the punchlines out.
Which is the worst thing for a comedian to do.
Absolutely. Now then, some film of his disastrous stand-up routine gets leaked to a David Letterman-type nightly talk show hosted by a character played by Robert De Niro. And, you know, there ensues a further humiliation for him. Mm. He loses his job. You know, nothing's going well for him. His mother is convinced that Thomas Wayne is his father because she worked as a maid in Wayne Manor. So there's a little undercurrent that, hang on a second, is the Joker actually Batman's half-brother? Wow. I'm going to leave that little thread just dangling there, okay? So, yeah, there's enough there for the comic book fans, but at its heart, what we have here is a damning condemnation of the way that mental health services are cut back, because Arthur's not getting the help he needs. Social services are cut back. His medication is denied him. So he starts going deeper and deeper off the deep end, and he starts having these delusions, and one night, an unfortunate occurrence on the subway, what we call the underground, he has to defend himself with a gun, and he shoots two Wall Street yuppie types dead, and calmly executes the third. And as soon as that happens, the public, who are already griping about an anti-rich rebellion, take this guy dressed as a clown as some sort of masthead, a figurehead, and they start dressing up in clown masks, pretty much like the Occupy protesters adopted the V for Vendetta Guy Fawkes masks a few years ago in real life.
Yeah.
And they start rioting. Arthur goes on the talk show. It goes disastrously for everybody apart from Arthur, who's got a gun. And there's a scene where you can see him literally transform from this loser into the Joker, merely by a change in posture, a change in expression. And they've also got Gary Glitter's rock and roll music playing in the background as part of the soundtrack music. And many people think, well, that's distasteful. But you know what? It fits the insanity and the menace of that theme. Mm. Just him walking around, the physical transformation, that particular music.
Is it Come On, Come On, that one?
My goodness.
Is it that one? Come On, Come On.
No, it's not that one. That's Do You Want to Be in My Gang?
Yeah,
it was Rock and Roll. I think it's called Rock and Roll Part 2.
Part 2, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he becomes wildly unpredictable, reveling in his own homicidal manic glory. It's there. It's in his eyes. It's in his posture, in his smirk. It's just a stunning performance of a tortured psyche. It's a much deeper film than your ordinary, you know, comic book movie. This is not Endgame. It's Endgame via maybe Taxi Driver.
Right, sounds like it's won your vote.
Sorry? Yes, it absolutely has. Because if you want to look at it in a comic book kind of way, what Todd Phillips, the writer-director, has given us, maybe unwittingly, is something that works perfectly well as the origin of Heath Ledger's Joker that we saw in Dark Knight. Because there, in that movie, the Joker says, you know, if I'm going to have an origin story, I want it to be, you know, multi-choice. So it's a good 9 out of 10 for me. It might not be the movie of the year. I don't know. The year isn't over yet. But
we'll be asking you that in December.
Certainly the deepest movie that I've seen this year. And it's certainly food for thought.
Sounds fascinating, Robbie. Can I ask one question? As our listener will know, and Robbie knows, I mean, I'm not the biggest knowledgeable person about comics and stuff. I'm kind of aware that somewhere in all of this genre, the Joker kind of drives Harley Quinn mad. I mean, that's how she becomes Harley Quinn, basically.
That's right, yeah.
So she's like his psychologist.
She,
and he drives him mad.
It didn't happen in this film.
No, I'm not saying in this film, but in her story, as it were, that's kind of what happens, isn't it?
That's correct, yes. She is his psychologist at Arkham Asylum.
Yes.
And he slowly starts to manipulate her.
Yes.
And in the end, he even tries in one storyline to get her to take the same chemical dip that he did to turn the skin bleach white, the hair.
So what I was going to ask was, does that kind of being able to psychologically twist a psychiatrist kind of match with being a failed comedian? Or is this one of these things which it's just diverging from what happened and we don't need to worry about it?
I think it's diverging from what happened, because I think that partly Harley Quinn, or Harleen Quinzel as she was as a psychiatrist, was unstable to begin with, and ultimately she becomes, you know, perhaps the worst case of Stockholm syndrome that we will ever see.
Yes. So what you're kind of suggesting here is that although they set out by saying this film doesn't meet anything, you know, it's standalone, blah, 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 you can actually reconcile some of the key elements happened in all the Batman strands with this film kind of thing.
Yes, because a riot at the end, and it's not a spoiler because we know this guy becomes the Joker, involves two of Gotham's elite walking down an alleyway with a young son, and they don't make it out. Part of that riot.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, so in a way they were kind of twisting with the fans a bit and saying it doesn't match anything.
Yeah, I think they were trying to appeal to a broader audience than us, you know, sort of comic book reading men, man-child.
Interesting.
Like myself.
So, Eloise, have you seen this film?
Yeah, I've seen The Joker's. I agree with Robin, it's really amazing. But I think it's less about the script, more about the acting. If there was a different acting choice, it wouldn't have been half as good.
So the actor is...
He is fantastic.
Absolutely agree, yes.
I think we're going to have to see it.
What did you think of that scene on the stairs, Eloise?
With the music? I thought the scene on the stairs was amazing, and though Gary Glitter probably, I could see the major issues with using him, that fit perfectly with what it was trying to show. So,
absolutely.
And was it's a bold that choice,
but
well,
the correct one.
So it would have been.
Yeah, even his dress sense and everything matched the era, the music. And
so the glam rock and all that kind of thing.
Yes, and he was wearing like a purple suit, pretty much again, like in the comic.
Right, right. Wow, wow. Well, it sounds like he's pretty bad.
It does. Ava, have you
seen
it?
I can't recommend this highly enough. It gets a solid 9 from me. Just because it's bold, it made me think, and it just ticked all the boxes.
Ava?
No, I've not actually seen the Joker films. I did hear, like, the recent one, people were walking out of it.
Is that the one, Robin?
Is that the one?
Yeah.
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 Is that true? Like, that they were walking
out? Well, I don't
know.
You never can tell with these things.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not.
You know, studio publicity departments will put a few ringers in the audience and just get word of mouth that way. Like the people who used to pretend to get possessed when they were watching The Exorcist back in the 70s.
I don't think that's
true. They were all in the bay of Warner Bros.
Watch your mouth. I know your game.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at superhero IRL. Thanks so much.
Hello. Hello, and we're back. And we're going to be talking about female villains now. Now, we've covered off the one of the worst male villains ever, the Joker.
The Joker.
So.
But you see, for me, I still have a very, very soft spot for Cesar Romero. I don't know if he was the original villain, to person play the Joker. Robin, was there anyone before him?
Nobody played the Joker before Cesar Romero.
Oh, I thought
he was very good.
I can tell you that Bob Kane based the character on Gwynplaine, a character played by Conrad
Veidt.
Veidt in The Man Who Laughs, a silent movie made in 1928.
I didn't know that. Eloise is nodding.
Yep.
She knew that.
Hey, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I never knew that.
No, I didn't.
That's fantastic.
No. It's an amazing film, though it is black and white and silent, Sam. I'm so sorry.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that means I probably wouldn't watch it.
Lon Chaney, the original, base his makeups for Phantom of the Opera on the ones for Gwynplaine? Was it vice versa?
No, he based his makeup for Phantom of the Opera on returning World War One wounded.
Oh. Wow.
Okay, that's fascinating. I genuinely didn't know that. But Cesar Romero, I think, was just a fabulous Joker. I loved his
He's one of the best to play the pure Joker because of his imposing height and the manic look in his eyes. Mm. Now, if he'd have been allowed to be menacing rather than, you know, basically a jolly clown who was a bit mischievous, he would have been terrifying.
He would. And, of course, that's what Jack Nicholson did. He kind of took that and just took it an extra several steps over the line.
Yeah. I thought he made
up a lot of his lines as well. They never knew quite what he was going to say next because as the Joker is wildly unpredictable, he decided to play it that way and make up, you know, a lot of lines as he went on, which is why, I mean, there's a scene where he confronts Bruce Wayne and Kim Basinger in her apartment and, you know, you've got Michael Keaton looking confused most of the time because he had no idea what Nicholson was going to come out with next, which played really well.
I love that. I love that. But female villains too. I mean, the whole Batman genre, if you like, is peppered with females. Of course, we've got Catwoman and stuff.
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy is one of my favourites, actually.
So why does Poison Ivy
Killing
work?
With a kiss.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Killing with a kiss.
Yeah, she poisons people with a kiss, doesn't she? Am I right there?
Yeah.
Not knowing much about comic books.
I'm impressed, yeah.
And Harley Quinn, of course.
My pupil.
Harley Quinn, of course, in a modern day culture, is
Harley
one of the...
Harley Quinn actually was never part of the canon until the Batman animated series started in 1992.
And yet,
she's become... been good for, 27 years now.
She's become such a big character that's most cosplayed.
Yes.
You know, when we're at Comic Cons, nearly everybody.
And we have seen them all shapes and sizes, have we not?
We have.
Yes.
We have male and female.
Yes.
Yes. I've seen a male one, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I even wore Harley Quinn shorts in Sheffield last year.
You did?
I thought, well,
those photos went viral, you know.
Photos went viral, Sam. Yeah. You watched that. So Eloise, what's your favourite? Do you have a favourite villain?
Female villain.
Sitting here trying to think of a female villain, and the only one coming to mind is Hela, from Marvel, and obviously Norse gods. But
oh, cool.
It's the only one I can think of.
Oh. What about Zelda, Queen of Diamonds? Marcia, Queen of Diamonds, I should say. What about Marcia?
Oh, Carolyn Jones.
Exactly.
Mm. Ava, have you got any?
Yeah, I'm the same as Eloise. I was trying to think of one. And you've already mentioned them. The one that comes to mind is Catwoman. I I'd say Catwoman's probably the only female villain I can think of the top of my head.
I think Catwoman is also one of those characters that she's been played by uber a sexy and attractive women in the past. And you always feel that she's sort of slightly dominatrix and very, very in charge. So I think she appealed to a certain type of audience a great deal, didn't she, back in the day?
You see, Catwoman, for me, it was always Julie Newmar again. It's going back to the original. But
yeah,
I think very, very hot on our heels, if not probably equal, is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes. I loved Michelle Pfeiffer.
I thought
Catwoman,
she was great,
actually.
Michelle Pfeiffer. I thought she looks like she had a ball playing it.
And, she did.
It comes over. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. But again, thinking of female villains, I mean, we're missing out on some of the most obvious ones. I mean, we've talked about it before on the show. But of course, you've got Villanelle from Killing Eve.
Killing Eve.
Who is one of the most marvellous modern female villains that you could possibly want to be. Have you guys seen Killing Eve?
No, I've not actually, no.
Oh, you don't watch
it definitely
do you?
Should be on your viewing list. And I'll tell you why, because the thing about Villanelle, which is so wonderfully written, is the fact that she's a complete and utter psychopath and delights in killing to the point that you just, at the beginning of the series, you go, oh my goodness, she's absolutely insane.
But she's just so cold.
She's so cold. She also enjoys it. She gets a kick out of it.
She gets off on it, yeah.
However, she does have some redeeming qualities, and that to me was like, from a writing point of view, I felt that's why she was usually successful, because there were these levels underneath about how she became what she was and the fact that she did have a weak spot for Eve and, could have killed her at any point and didn't.
And yeah. I think we've seen this time and time again, as Robin will attest, is where a female villain, or a male villain indeed, works is where they're not just sort of dumped there and that's what they are. It's when they have something of a backstory, when you do understand a little bit about their psyche and how they got there and what's going on.
I think it's the same with any villain, I think.
Sounds very similar to Luther.
But as a counterpoint to that, I think one of my favourite screen villainesses is Daryl Hannah's character in Kill Bill.
Oh, yes.
Mm. She has no redeeming qualities. She's just in for a good, clean kill.
Yeah. And also, I think perhaps there's also a little bit of jealousy and a need for revenge on Uma Thurman's character, of course, in that one. So there's an underlying trait that she really wants to see her off.
And
how memorable was seeing Daryl Hannah in that nurse's costume walk towards the camera to the tune of Twisted Nerve?
I can't even whistle, so...
You can't whistle. That wasn't an error on the soundtrack there.
Just don't forget Joan Collins as the siren. That's all I have to say. Joan Collins as the siren.
Of course, she could sing in how many different keys at once?
Mm. Of course, that's a good point, Eloise.
Yeah,
a lot of female villains are in Disney films. That's sort of obviously Cruella.
Got all the... Queens and
Maleficent.
Yeah. Mm. Yep, you've got all of the... There's always a wicked queen, isn't there? A wicked stepmother. Cinderella, of course, being one of those. Or a wicked witch of
the
some
queen
sort.
The Queen in Snow White, what's she called? She doesn't actually got a name, has she?
Maleficent.
That is Maleficent,
you know,
isn't it?
The worst villain in all of Disney is,
I
in my opinion.
It's Godzilla, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
The worst villain in Disney is that little girl that lures Mowgli away from the jungle where he's been living a happy life.
Yes. Made a fool of me, but the broken dreams have got to
we'll be right back.
And before we start talking about the next section of the show, I'm going to tell you a horror story, Robin. Horror story of today.
I owe you money?
I can maybe speculate
that you don't. No, I went to the doctors today, and I know exactly what Dave is going to say about this, trying to have a blood test, and they couldn't get any out of me. I've got two punctures in my arms.
Oh, my God, it must be like trying to get blood out of a stone.
Ah! There you go. I was waiting for that.
Well done, Robin.
And I was actually thinking it on the way home.
You win the famous Stone Tapes No Prize.
So, we're going to talk about David's Film of the Month, and what is that today?
We are, my Film of the Month. Well, because we were talking about villains and all sorts of things, I thought we'd have a chat about a film called Dracula. Now, it's quite an obscure little film. You might not have heard of this one, Robin, or Eloise, or Eva.
Is this a new character?
Yes, it's a new character. Yes, it's brand new. It was interestingly created by an Irish writer way back in at the end of the 1800s. And it's a fascinating character, Dracula, because it's kind of like, you know, is he a villain or isn't he a villain? I don't know. That's interesting.
That depends on the version you see of it.
It depends on the version you see, because I'm being, of course, deeply ironic and postmodern, because everybody's heard of Dracula these days. But the film that we watched was the original 1931 Universal American Todd Browning with the classic Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula.
Yes, and it was in black and white.
And
Robin,
it was
and
in
I
black and
it.
White, and Sam watched it, and that was extraordinary.
I have seen
I'm
it many
proud
times.
Of
before.
You.
Now, what we found particularly interesting, actually, about this watching was that through my publishing company, Telos Publishing, we've actually just released a new edition of Dracula, the actual novel. There's a reason for this. We've got Dacre Stoker, Dracula's great grandnephew, coming over for Sci-Fi Weekender. And we thought, hey, it'd be nice to
not
have...
Not Dracula's great-grandnephew.
No, Bram
Stoker.
Bram Stoker's.
It's close. Well,
there's a clue
Dracula's.
In his name. Thank you, Alex. Yes. Yes, Dracula's great-grandnephew. So we thought it'd be nice to have an additional Dracula. So we just done this edition of Dracula. So Sam and I both re-familiarised ourselves with the novel, obviously, in editing.
I studied it for my first degree, of course. But
the first thing about the Universal Dracula that we both found really interesting is that it's Renfield who goes to Transylvania to Dracula's castle in the film. Not Jonathan Harker.
And in actual fact, Renfield did go, but you start the story after Renfield's returned and has been put into an asylum. So instead, they show all of the aspects
Understandable.
Of,
they only had about 70 minutes to play with.
Exactly.
To get the whole book in there.
And we noticed this all the way through the Universal film is it's compacted and shuffled and moved around. But
also,
course,
based more on the stage play rather than the novel.
It was absolutely based on the stage play. But it's a fascinating film. The other thing that really stood out for me was the lack of music.
Yes.
Is that you get these marvellous scenes of, you know, Dracula creeping in through the window and coming towards Mina in her bed as she's sleeping there, or the smoke, or the bat on the string.
Actually, that was pretty
and
good.
All that.
That was
and
pretty
it's good. All silent.
Listen to the children of the night. What sweet music they make.
It's like he's in the room. That's terrifying.
I never drink. Yeah.
Wine.
Yeah. So I found that fascinating. That it's mostly sort of obviously it's not a silent film, but there's no music, and so a lot of the action takes place against a silent backdrop. I thought that was fascinating. The other thing that I particularly like about it, it's a very very small thing, and it's that scene. And you'll remember this, Robin. Have you seen the Universal Dracula?
I think I have. A few years ago.
Yeah, it was quite a long time ago. Yeah, there's the lovely, lovely scene where Dracula comes down. He's a great big castle wreathed in cobwebs and stuff. And Dracula comes down the great big staircase to greet Renfield, who's arrived at his castle. And you've got this wonderful moment where Dracula comes down the stairs, but there's this massive cobweb right across the stairs, which remains completely intact. And
that's
somehow
right.
Dracula gets through and then back through this cobweb.
Doesn't mess it up.
And he doesn't mess it up. At all, but it's never commented on, except that, of course, Renfield gets to it and gets his cane and has to sort of like slash his way through this cobweb to make the point. And I love that. Love that
brilliant.
Subtlety of actually, there's some quite seriously weird going on here. You've got to kind of watch this.
You can never forget Renfield's laugh either, can you?
Oh, Renfield, Dwight Fry is amazing as Renfield. It is such an incredible performance. And the listener at home can't see this, but Alex has actually now got Dracula playing on his computer monitor, a trailer for it. That's fantastic. But as we said at the start, there have been many, 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 many Draculas. Mm. And do you have a favourite Dracula, Sam?
I have two. I have Louis Jourdan, which was from the BBC TV series in the
80s.
77, was it? Wow. Absolutely loved him in that. And I always felt that that version of Dracula was the closest to the book as well. Yeah. And I absolutely love Bram Stoker's Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola version, yes, with Gary Oldman plays, although the story is not strictly correct because they gave him an amazing backstory. I absolutely love his performance as Dracula.
Mm, it's very, very good.
And I like the modernisation of it slightly as well.
Do you guys have a favourite version of Dracula that you've seen?
Do you know what? I can't remember the version I saw, but because it was a few years ago that I watched it when I was... it was when I was studying in sixth form, actually, because we watched it for... I think it was a mixture of English and drama. But it was actually that one that Alex is playing.
This fella,
I think it's the trailer for.
The original, Universal Dracula.
The original one.
Wow.
Because it was education, so...
What about you, Eloise?
Probably doesn't count, but I really like Adam Sandler's version in Hotel Transylvania.
Nice. Oh. Why not? I mean, there's so many versions.
And Robin, do you have a favourite?
Of course. Much as I like Christopher Lee's ferocity, I mean, he's a wild animal in a suit.
Mm.
My favourite is Lugosi.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Yes. Head and shoulders above the rest.
And interestingly, Christopher Lee does mimic Lugosi's behaviour with the cape quite a lot.
Yes.
I observed that again.
Lee was wearing Lugosi's ring for that film.
How interesting.
Oh. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
He had the prop.
Mm. And no mention for John Carpenter in House of Frankenstein.
Outrageous.
John Carradine. Exactly. John Carradine.
He wasn't directing a film.
Exactly.
John Carradine. I was going to say, have you got a favourite, Alex?
I think John Carradine actually is. Yeah. I like the House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula style. Even Lon Chaney Jr. had an attempt.
I don't think I've seen that one actually with Carradine.
Yeah, I've never seen the Frank Langella version.
I have. I can talk about that. I do know that one. But I actually really
loved
it.
And it will be coming to me via a South American river.
Yes.
Again, they play fast and loose with the characters. They're different. Jan Francis, for example, is suddenly Mina. And Lucy is the Mina character. They switch those two around. But you've got, of course, the wonderful Laurence Olivier as Van Helsing. And Frank Langella is... I think he's really good as the role.
So is that love, love at first bite?
No, you're thinking of George Hamilton, which is also a beautiful, a great favourite of mine.
Yes.
But Langella one, it is dark, it's a product of its era, but there is some good acting in it, good performances.
No, they don't disco dance.
No,
we also had a call out while we were listening to the last song. We had a call out for Richard Roxburgh in Van Helsing.
Absolutely, we were talking about that, weren't we? Eloise mentioned Van Helsing.
Yeah.
And we were like, yeah.
Because Dracula crops up everywhere. It doesn't even have to have his name in the title.
No.
He even cropped up in an episode of Buffy, didn't he?
He did.
And actually, very well played again. I forget what the actor's called, but it was a fun episode, that. That was Buffy versus Dracula. Yes.
And I think we've got about...
Season 4 opener, I think.
Yes.
We've got about 1 minute left or so. So we were also kind of pondering on the worst ever Dracula. And I wondered, Robin, do you have a view on the worst Dracula?
The worst ever Dracula film I saw, sadly, had John Carradine as Dracula in Billy the Kid versus Dracula, in the 60s.
Oh.
Dear me.
He was paving the way for his son David to become Kung Fu master.
Tai Kwai Kane, or whatever. I was pondering, Robin, on Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires.
Oh, that is awful.
That is awful. I love the film, but the Dracula in it. Oh, it's dreadful. Sam, have you got any contenders?
I agree with you on that one, but I was also thinking of this awful Canadian film we watched once that we were given to review, that awful CD. And the guy had written his own version of Dracula, performed in it, directed it.
Played the music.
No.
Sung the theme tune.
Just no. He basically walked all over the legend that is Dracula in that film, and it wasn't good.
Oh, dear.
And that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much to Eloise Sheehan, Ava MacDonald, David J. Howe.
Thank you.
Robin Pierce.
Thank you.
Alex Leftoe.
Thank you.
And of course...
You've been who? Who are you?
And of course, Patricia H. Ashler on the phone. And I am Samantha Lee Howe, also known as Sam Stone, when I feel like it. Until next month.
Bye.